You're listening to the Speaking Tongues podcast. I'm your host, El Sharice. Each week, I sit down to a conversation with multilinguals where we discuss and celebrate language, life, and culture through our own perspectives.
Episode 138, Speaking Catalan.
Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Tongues. I'm here today with Taylor. Taylor was born, raised, and educated in rural Missouri. Her nearest childhood city is only half the population of the European micronation of Andorra, where she spent her 2021-2022 Fulbright English Teaching Assistant grant. And she recently finished an MA in English, where she analyzed regional literature. Her other passions include the digital humanities, linguistics, identity, and community. Taylor, welcome to Speaking Tongues. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for that introduction, Elle.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for having this conversation with me. And this is probably my first Catalan focused episode. So I'm happy to be having this conversation with you.
Yes. Like we were chatting, you hosted two other people, Cuba and Mathieu, who talked about Catalan and how it intersected with a moment in their lives. And while I've studied other languages, Catalan has taken my heart. And that is why I really wanted to focus on that today.
Well, let's get into it. I like to start each episode, you may know, with the same question, which is, what is your first language and which languages have you learned to speak?
My first language is English. I was monolingual essentially until I was about 20 years old. I have studied Spanish. My rural high school had less than 400 people between sixth grade and 12th grade. I grew up between three abandoned towns, and the nearest one had just over 100 people in it that actually had some semblance of a community.
Oh my gosh.
So I joke that I escaped my small town just to go to a micronation. And as a English major, the irony is not lost on me. So it's... Oh, your laugh is very well appreciated. So at my small town high school, we had 2 years of Spanish. That was all that could be offered.
Okay.
With just our small class sizes and just the interest in the community. When I went to college, I started taking French, and that's my third language. And soon after, I discovered Catalan. And even though my university only had the ability to offer one semester of Catalan, I was able to advance myself with other programs. And I guess I can throw in some honorable mention languages. I had to take Latin for one of my degrees. And yeah.
Love Latin.
Only one semester.
Okay.
But I will say, after 3 years of Spanish and French, I literally fell asleep in the class, not because the teacher was uninteresting, because he was a fantastic person. Mm-hmm. I worked night shifts at one of the places near campus. So yeah. it was a me problem, not a him problem. But I partly slept through class, and I only needed a 50% on the final to get an A in the class. I was like,
to
yes.
Get an A? Wow.
Yes. When you study one Romance language, it helps with all the others, even
absolutely.
If you're going backwards historically. Mm-hmm. And speaking of going backwards historically, I took a class on medieval literature as well as Old English. So those are my honorable mentions for languages that
nice.
I have studied.
In your small town in Missouri, were you exposed to any other languages aside from English? I mean, you said you took Spanish, but were there Spanish speakers in your town or anywhere in that, you know, between those abandoned towns? Like, did you have any other exposure to other languages or anything like that?
That's a great question, because I was exposed to Dora the Explorer and Diego, which is very trivial in certain sense, but it as an introduction mm-hmm. to like young learners, it's it's almost a rite of passage in the United States to watch their shows. And as I was a teenager, I realized that I could find Spanish speakers at the local Mexican restaurant that we really loved. And outside of that, our communities didn't interact with each other. So I began wondering why immigrants are so fond of starting restaurants to promote their heritage cuisine. While I don't have an answer for that, I would love if anybody in the show notes or in the comments to the podcast can answer that question, please and thank you. I was also exposed to a little bit of German. My ancestors historically were from the German-Dutch border when they emigrated around the time of the Civil War to rural Missouri. So one of our towns is situated in the German Heritage Corridor, as dubbed by the Missouri Humanities Council. And the streets are bilingual in German, even if there are, like, the stereotype about rural Americans is that we're not open to immigration. But there is that when it was culture and adding value to our community, that was a line that we were able to cross. And it gives me a lot of pause for thought when I think about the decisions that allowed certain cultures to be expressed in my rural community, and while others were almost subcultures in our greater area.
Tell me how Catalan came into your life. How did Andorra come into your life? What were some of the things that led to where you are now?
So I am a first generation college graduate. So I didn't know a lot about going to college, and I kind of learned a few things from movies. But as we know from movies and the internet, you can't believe everything you see or read. So I am in my first semester at university, and this very outgoing and bubbly person invites me to learn about the Catalan independence movement. And I'm like, I know nothing about this. I'm at college to know things, and I guess I should go. She was studying the same degree as me in language arts. So I'm like, okay, well, she's older. She knows this. She's hosting it. I should definitely go. And I went. I remembered thinking, oh, well, isn't Spain all Spain? I'm from, like you said in the intro, from Missouri, which some people consider flyover country. So I found myself flying over, like, all Spain is Spain. Like, should it, is there a different culture? I don't know. Well, I guess I'm here figuring it out. So as I, at the end of the presentation, I somewhat decided I wanted to learn more. And all of a sudden there was an invitation to, we're going to be back here in this same room, same time next week. I'm like, did I sign up for something? Is this a club? What's happening? So I went the next week and the week after that, and we actually did children's stories on the projection board so we could read along and learn how to pronounce things and what things were similar or different from Spanish and French. And keep in mind, I only had 2 years of Spanish in high school, and I'm trying to navigate Catalan, and they were my 9th and 10th grade year. So I had 2 years without even Spanish. My university was able to offer our host a visiting professor from the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, the Autonomous University of Barcelona, to teach us Catalan the following semester. So I enrolled, and we went through a lot of grammar concepts, and she taught in a way that allowed us to quickly make connections. So we almost had A2 at the end of one semester.
Wow.
I was also the English tutor for the visiting professor because she wanted to advance her English. And I still text her a few times a year about, like, how's it going? And it's a mixture of Catalan and English, and it's really promoting that cultural understanding.
So you came to Andorra when?
So I came to Andorra for the first time in 2016 when I was studying abroad in France. Okay. I had a 3-day weekend for Toussaint, All Saints Day, and I knew someone living here. It was the same person who invited me to learn about the Catalan independence movement 2 years before. So it was a full circle moment. And during those 3 days, I had a great time and knew I wanted to come back. So when I filled out my Fulbright application, I wanted to go to Andorra and only Andorra, where I could use the Spanish, French, and Catalan that I've studied in a multilingual environment that's not offered in rural Missouri. So even if Andorra in other regards resembles in terms of geography, but in terms of like people behavior, small town dynamics, like I was able to map all that and be and have a great time in the country. But part of coming here is I had hurdles with my application, and it took 4 cycles before my application was accepted by the international committee. And I moved to Andorra in fall 2021 to start my grant.
I just realized I've been saying Andorra, like with such a hard R at the end. I am a New Yorker, so I apologize that I'm not rolling that R into Andorra. And I picked that up as you were talking about it. So thank you for...
It's okay. I've lived here long enough that I've adopted certain pronunciations that might not be normal for other people. I forgot that Notre Dame, we call Notre Dame in the US. So when I had to say Notre Dame the first time in 2017, coming back to the US after studying abroad, I was like, Notre Dame, Notre Dame, crepe. Don't you mean crepe? Don't you mean Notre Dame? What are you doing?
I would like to know about Catalan. Talk to us a bit about the language. How was the language constructed? We know it's Romance language. How is it constructed? How are we forming sentences? Is it gendered? Is it tonal? Are there any other features of the language that you find interesting or that maybe stand out to you that you want to mention?
At first glance, Catalan looks a lot like Spanish. You might find certain patterns, like with the imperfect. Our imperfect is not ABA, ABA. It's AVA, which is pronounced the same way, ABA, when we do our imperfect tense. In Catalan, we don't use the tilde with the años. We say an instead, A-N-Y, where the N-Y is the same sound as the N-Y with the tilde. So the Y is not a vowel in Catalan. It's only used when paired with the letter N to make that sound.
Whoa. Okay.
Same with montaña. Montaña in Spanish. Like Spanish, the H in Catalan is silent. Well, and same in French. So
what's not silent in French, Taylor?
That is very true. Another thing that people struggle with is in Catalan, we use definite articles in front of people. So when I introduce myself, I soc la Taylor. I am the Taylor, which can be a little, not egocentric, but also empowering. Like, I am the Taylor in this country. Soc la Taylor aquí a Andorra. I am the Taylor here in Andorra.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's really cool.
So, for example, you would be et l'el quan arribas a Andorra. You are L. You are the L when you arrive in Andorra. Another thing that confuses all learners of Catalan is when we form our past tense, we use the verb to go, which in English, Spanish, and French, you use that to form the simple future. I'm going to the store. I'm going to go to the store. Voy a ir al mercado. Je vais aller au marché. We don't do that in Catalan. While you can hear it on the street, you are in informal settings. Formal Catalan doesn't want to recognize it because it's so similar to the past tense. So yesterday, I went to the market. Ahí vaig anar al mercat. I'm using the to go verb to represent the past.
Is this only for to go? Like,
no, like you use it for everything. Like, ahí vas a comprar carotas per sopa. Yesterday, I bought carrots for dinner. What did I do yesterday? Ahí vas a enseñar inglés. Yesterday, I taught English.
Okay.
You also have to know that there's another past tense that follows more of the passé composé in French. So if I'm
My
talking about,
nemesis. Sorry. Go ahead.
well, fortunately in Catalan, you only have one verb to conjugate. You don't have to think about the être. And what's the mnemonic device, Mr. and Mrs. Duffeldorf?
Oh.
Dunder? There's a mnemonic device to
I
help.
know, but I learned it as Mr. Dr. and Mrs.
Yeah,
Vandekamp, Vanderpump,
that sounds right.
Vander Spiel. I don't know.
Yes.
Dr. and Mrs. Vander somebody.
In Catalan, we only use the haber verb, which is similar to the avoir verb in French, and haber in Castilian Spanish or any Spanish. So we, for times that have not stopped, like today, enseñar inglés. I'm an English teacher, so I'm teaching English. But I also will do that tomorrow, and I did it yesterday. I can talk about this week. This week, he enseñado muchas clases de inglés. This week, I taught many classes of English. But if I say last week, which is a time that has ended, then I have to use the periphrastic past, which is the la semana pasada, vaig enseñar inglés también. Last week, I also taught English.
It sounds a lot simpler.
Yeah, and when you use the periphrastic, the ana verb plus the infinitive, you're only conjugating one verb. You're not having to do the haber plus past participle.
I like this. I like the
Yes.
simplicity as somebody who's fighting for my life every day with French. I like simplicity. I need
Yes.
simplicity in my life. In Andorra, which we know is a small principality, right?
Yes.
Small
Yes.
principality. And there, I would imagine there are enough people for a principality of this size, right? I would love to know, are there variations in Catalan as spoken in Andorra? Like if you go from the east to the west, do people speak differently when they're closer to France or when they're closer to the Spanish port? Like how does Catalan change within Andorra?
So, if you're in the southern parish, which is San Julia, that's how you would access Spain. You definitely have more of that Spanish influence. And the Andorran Catalan more or less follows the same rules as the accent in Lleida, which is the sub-region of Catalonia that is closest to Andorra and the administrative region that governs the comarcas or the counties that are around the Spanish counties that are around Andorra. There is a book that was published in the 1960s that talks about some of the linguistic differences of Andorra from 80, no, 60 years ago. And it was interesting finding this book because the research was done during the time of Franco, the Civil War, and with Catalan being outlawed in Catalonia in any language that's not Spanish, Andorra was really the only place to come to study Catalan. And the book is called Atlas Lingüístic d'Andorra, The Linguistic Atlas of Andorra, published 1960 by Monsignor A. Greira, Greira, for the listeners who want to look this up on their own. And to my surprise, when I checked out this book from the university library, it's 600 pages and it's like A4 type paper. Like, this
Wow.
is like legal document size for the people who are in the US and don't know what A4 is. So each spread has four maps on it, outlining the different towns in the country and how those towns pronounced a certain word. So in this book, they had easily 500 words that they mapped and how they were different from each other. And of course, the parishes in Andorra, which Andorra administratively is separated into parishes, like how states are separated into counties. The closer you were to France, the more you spoke Catalan like a French person. And there are still certain Andorra words that are used that resemble French. Réveil, for example, sounds like the French word réveil, which means like an alarm clock. We just say it in a Catalan way and spell it in a Catalan way. And lycée, we say lycée, but in or Catalan, you would say lycée or lyceu to indicate that it's a French high school rather right. than bachillerato.
What's bachillerato?
Oh, so in the Spanish and Andorran school system, you graduate with your high school diploma at the age of 16. Mm-hmm. And you spend the last 2 years before college at bachillerato in Spain, or bachillerat in Catalan, that's what we would call it. Uh-huh. And it's considered like pre-college.
Okay.
And if you don't pass all your bachillerat exams, you're not considered eligible to go to college.
In your travels around Andorra, how have you noticed that your communication has to change when you are in different regions of the principality? I keep wanting to say the country, but the principality, and when you move closer to the French, you know, part, or closer to the Spanish border, like how do you adapt to changing your style of communication as you move around?
So it can be a bit more nuanced than that. If you're going to the ski slopes, you might hear Argentinian Spanish because, yeah, the snow is seasonal. So if you want to be a ski instructor in Argentina, you only have work half the year. If you want to be a ski instructor in Andorra, you only have work half the year. So there are people who live their lives half the year between the two countries.
I'm doing life wrong, Taylor.
So in Andorra, we have three ski slopes, three ski slope companies. They are, well, I'm not trying to do any branding, so I won't say them, but okay. you can do your own research. There are plenty of Spaniards and French people who have been able to find them and congest our roads during their holidays. And being in a country of mountains, there isn't always sufficient highways to accommodate everybody. Mm-hmm. So please be mindful if you are coming to Andorra during a major holiday. You might not have the best experience from a tourism perspective. And I just want to make that clear right now. So, we were talking about language expectations around Andorra. So of course, if you're going to Pa de la Casa, which literally means steps of the house, it is the town on the French border with Andorra. It's where the highway is. And that town grew out of being one of the first ski slopes in Andorra. And it's the shopping center for many people in the Ariège Département. In the Ariège County of France, they would come and buy their stuff because Andorra isn't in the EU, so it pays a little less in taxes. So when you buy something here, depending on the item, it's cheaper. So there's a lot of tourism here just for shopping. Another place where you'll hear French is around the French schools. So we have about three French primary schools and one secondary school, which is the Lycée Comte de Foix, named after one of the co-princes of Andorra, going back 800 years, or almost 800 years, give or take.
Okay.
Well, this isn't a math podcast. The language on the street is mainly Spanish, but if you're going to like the Body Antique or any place that has older development or older homes, that is where some established Andorrans or Catalan-speaking communities are. So you'll more likely hear it in there than elsewhere. If you're going to like hip modern restaurant, you're not going to hear it as much, even though in Andorra you have the right to speak Catalan in any establishment. And therefore the establishment has to provide somebody who is Catalan speaking, and you as the customer are not required to change your language if you're speaking Catalan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole branch of the government dedicated to Catalan here.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mentioned one of the French-ish words that came into Catalan here in Andorra. I have a list of other words that we can maybe touch on.
Yeah.
So I forget what the word for butterfly is in Spanish and French right now, but I got you.
Spanish, mariposa?
Yes.
French, papillon.
So in here in Andorra, it's called pita bola. Yes.
That's so cute.
Here in Andorra, there used to be two rival bus companies. I forget what their names were, but you needed a bus no matter what, whether it was company A or company B. So mm-hmm. people started putting the names together about in the mid-1900s. And colloquially, the local bus is called a clipol. After combining the names of the two companies, they're like, oh, it's just Clipol. Even though right now there's not a bus company that resembles that name mm-hmm. in operation.
Yeah.
And, oh, Folky Yoke. Please do not say that incorrectly. Folk is fire, yoke is place. So that colloquially, that's known as your local taxes when you pay your parish. So going back to the question about where you might hear different languages, there are also there's a different sense of pride depending on which parish you live in. So that's called parroquialismo, so parochialism. Because our Andorra is separated into parishes as like administrative regions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like if you're proud of your local county or district in New York City, like my district is so much better than your district. That's as here.
Okay.
Andorra La Vella is the center of power, the historic place. Escaldes is the up and coming like hipster parish because it was established Ooh. In 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the newest one on the block. You have San Julia, which is the education center. It has the three universities plus the Ministry of Education, some primary schools and the vocational education center. So like that's San Julia's vibe. La Massana, I tend to find the best restaurants. Ordino has a nice historic downtown, so people tend to be very proud of that. Plus one of the museums in Ordino is of the a wealthy family from the 1800s.
Okay.
So historically, Ordino has thought well of itself. Ingaup is like a dormitory town, and the parish of Canillo is definitely the most rural parish.
We know that Catalan is also spoken in Barcelona. Do you notice the Catalan spoken in Andorra spoken differently in other parts of the region of Catalonia? Like, are there differences, and are you aware of those? Have you noticed those differences, and how has your communication had to change as you're communicating with people in Catalonia but not from Andorra?
The majority of Catalan speakers or the population of Catalonia is centered around Barcelona. And since that was the first accent that I learned, I had internalized those pronunciation rules.
Mm-hmm.
So even when I have teachers who are from the region of Lleida or are Andorran themselves speaking Catalan, I can understand their accent. But I haven't given myself practice to speak Catalan with the Andorran accent. So as an American in Andorra with red hair and a Barcelona accent, I pegged really quickly as a foreigner.
Okay.
But I, for lack of a better term, bulldoze my way into keep speaking like Catalan. I'm here to learn. I'm taking my B2 exam in January, and I want to get to C1.
Hello, language lovers. If you enjoy this episode of Speaking Tongues, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the Speaking Tongues podcast on Apple Podcasts, and like and subscribe on Spotify and YouTube so that other language lovers like ourselves can find the show. If you've been a longtime listener of the show or a recent listener, you can now pledge ongoing support for the show on buymeacoffee.com or on patreon.com. What are some of the things that people are so fiercely proud of that's theirs? It's not French, it's not Spanish, it's Andorran, and the people are proud of it and they love it and they believe in it, support it, champion it, anything. It could be food, it could be music, it could be a style of dance, a style of dress. Are there any things like that that you've noticed that are like purely Andorran?
So Andorra is the only country in the world that whose national language is Catalan. So that's part of the reason why there's a branch of government dedicated to protecting the language. In Andorra, they are proud of being a co-principality. So this goes back to feudal times in the 1200s. Andorra was caught in between two people who claimed rights to the territory, and they negotiated a peace treaty between the Bishop of Urgell, which is in the comarca of Spain, bordering the town is called La Seu d'Urgell, Urgell, depending on which language you want to say it in, and the Comte de Foix, with Foix being a town in between Andorra and Toulouse. So through that agreement, Andorra was able to have peace and has not been at war with another country. There's one caveat: when Andorra jumped on the bandwagon to declare war against Germany, and the Treaty of Versailles forgot to mention Andorra. So Andorra was accidentally at war with Germany without actually doing anything about it.
So, that's a fun piece of trivia.
Yes. So Andorra is proud of being a peaceful place that's brought through both their co-princes, one having always been the Bishop of Urgell, and the other one being the Comte de Foix, which then became the region of Béarn in the northern part of the French Pyrenees. And then when Henri Quatre became King of France, that's when the powers of the co-principality of Andorra went to the King of France, and then French Revolution, and now the President of France has the power as the co-prince of Andorra. So Andorra is also the world's only co-principality. It is one of the oldest parliaments in Andorra. When it made its parliament about 1419 AD, that's when Andorra established a parliament of sorts with their land council.
Yes. What kind of food do we find there?
The most popular dish here is the escudella, which is a type of soup made with like sausages. It is mainly, there's a holiday that goes along with it in mid-January for the feast day of Saint Anthony, La Festa de San Antonio. There is a church dedicated to that saint in the parish of La Massana.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I mentioned earlier that has the better ratio of good restaurants. So it all checks out. And for their feast day, they make the soup, and there are a few more activities in La Massana that focus on Escudella and that local church, because it's in their parish.
Mm-hmm.
All the other parishes participate, and they have commercialized the holiday a little bit, where each parish makes their own bowl with a and inside the bowl they have a design of one of the iconic things about the parish.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got mine in 2022, I went, the one that I bought was in Encamp, and I have, in that bowl, they have a picture of the church of Cortals. I don't remember the patron saint that's with Cortals. There are like 30 Romanesque churches in Andorra. Trying to keep track of all these saints is like being back in Catholic school. Like, I didn't know I needed to pay attention as an eight-year-old, and that I would need this 15 or 20 years later. So
yeah,
it's a nice bowl. It's decorative. It's ceramic. I know people who use their bowls regularly as like just everyday meals, and
mm-hmm.
just a nice way to have that parish pride, parochialismo, that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. What are we celebrating in Andorra? Where are the big feasts? What is the yearly celebration around, you know, you mentioned some about saints and patron saints and stuff, but like, do we have any festivals that revolve around a specific type of food, or one that revolves around a season or a harvest or a spirit, a beverage? I don't know. Like, what do we celebrate, and how do we celebrate in Andorra?
Some of the food that is around festivities in Andorra, two holidays that are unique to Andorra is our patron saint is of the country is the Virgin of Merice, La Verge de Deu de Merice. So her, even though the legend of her appearance takes place on the Three Kings Day, January 6th,
mm-hmm.
her feast day is September 8th.
Okay.
And there's not really a pastry that I've found that's emblematic, but different local pastry shops try to make something that's emblematic of the Virgin of Merice. And this year, one of the local bakeries made a crown. So they wove some bread together and put some pieces on top as if it was like jewels. And that was the crown of Merice that was a dessert that I ate for that holiday. Another holiday that's unique to Andorra is Constitution Day. Well, December 6th is Constitution Day in Andorra. The French Revolution, the Bastille Day in France is July 14th. Independence Day in the US is July 4th. So each country has their own concept of it. But what makes Andorra unique is that they got their first constitution in 1993.
What?
Yes.
That's even like though, recent.
Yeah. We know people who are older than the constitution of Andorra. We're not going to name names.
Name myself. I'm older than the constitution of Andorra. Wow. Was there like a massive celebration this year?
Yeah. Earlier on March 14th.
Yeah. I'd love to hear about your Fulbright studies and, you know, if you want to share like what you're doing with the program. You told us a bit about how you got to the program, how you came into the program, but let us know about your Fulbright studies and what you've been learning so far, if that's how it works. And most importantly, let us know if you care to share how we can get in touch with you.
So The Fulbright program was started after World War II under the Truman administration, Truman being the only president from Missouri to have served in that office. And it's called the Fulbright Bill after J. William Fulbright, who was a legislator from Northwest Arkansas in the part that's the Ozarks, which shares a cultural ties with Southern Missouri. And in fact, Mr. Fulbright was born in Missouri. So thanks to my home state, we have this program that promotes cultural exchanges across the world. Spain has had their program for over 50 years, and France was one of the first programs to partner with the U.S. for the exchanges. And Andorra was able to jump on the bandwagon as well in the late 1990s after gaining its own constitution. So, yay! And the program here, so it's a little over 20 years old. To be an American participating in Fulbright, specifically in Andorra, they're looking for people who have studied at least Spanish or French to an intermediate or advanced level. Catalan is preferred because, like I said, there's a lot of reasons to be proud of Catalan here. You have to go for it. Mm-hmm. And new for 2024-2025, the Fulbright Spain Commission is partnering with the Autonomous Region of Catalonia to offer some grants there. So if Andorra is too much of a commitment, you can always think about applying for Fulbright Spain if Catalan's your passion. Mm-hmm. So in Andorra, we only do secondary education. So we do ESO and Bachillerat, plus the VOTEC. Mm-hmm. And because this is an agreement between Andorra and the United States, you're only placed in the Andorran school system. You're not going to the lycée. You're not going to College San Armengol or Maria Molina, mm-hmm. which are two of the Spanish schools in Andorra. You are only doing the Andorran school system. So if you're in secondary, you have students between 12 and 16. If you're at Bachillerat or VOTEC, you have students who are 16 to 18, or right. at the VOTEC, sometimes even older.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You, just like in the U.S., getting a trade degree isn't always tied to a career center or a community college, mm-hmm. which community college doesn't have a direct translation here. It's a two-year program, in essence, kind of like Bachillerat, but we wouldn't call their bachillerat degree the same equivalent as a community college degree. So there's a lot of nuances when it comes to international education co-validation, which I know nothing about, but impacts a lot of people, especially in Andorra. If you're doing Fulbright in Andorra, the only option is to be a teaching assistant. There are no research or scholar or study positions like okay. other countries offer. But I definitely had a great life, a work-life balance when I did my grant. My teachers were very understanding. They let me have certain autonomy. They also shared the curriculum with me in advance, as well as their personal lives. And they're some of the coolest people I know in Andorra. A part of Fulbright's mission is that we need to be involved in the community. So as a literature student, I try to find bookstores and libraries. Getting a library card was one of the first things I did here. And I'm very, very proud of that.
Yes, I'm proud of that. I love libraries. Do you want to share your Instagram if anyone wants to get in touch? Or
at the moment, I'm only consistent on Instagram. Can we put consistent in air quotes? I think that's the most accurate thing to say. I am at Central Polyglot. And let me spell that for our listeners. It is CentralPolyglot.
Thank you. I will add a link to your social, and I will add a link to the Fulbright program also as well in the show notes for this episode, so that people who are interested in applying or people who want to give you a thumbs up, a high five for teaching them so much about Endora, they can get in touch with you and let you know right away. Thank you so much for this conversation, Taylor.
You're very welcome.
I like to end each episode with the same question, just to have a little bit of fun. Do you have any jokes, popular sayings, tongue twisters, cool slang words, idioms, words of wisdom, or words of advice in Catalan to share and to teach us?
So can I do two, or are we over time? Okay. So one I learned today is Els Guarda Espaiats. So even though Catalan is a scatologic language, which I believe Cuba mentioned is in episode 12, loving poop. In English, we have the phrase cover our butts. And when I try to explain that and mime it to a Catalan speaker, they corrected me to say that Els Guarda Espaiats is to cover your shoulders or to guard your shoulders.
Okay.
I was like, oh, like of all the times that like English and Catalan could have agreed on something, this idiom is not it. Why? I was like, there was so much opportunity here. Like the facts were in my favor. And
so how would we say that? Can you break that down for us, and we can repeat after you so that, yes, you know, we can all try.
So we have guarda, which is like to guard or to save. Guarda.
Guarda.
Espaiats.
Espaiats.
Yes.
Guarda so, espaiats.
Yes.
Watch and your shoulders. Watch your, yep, shoulders.
Mm-hmm. And my other favorite idiom is quatragats. Which means four cats. And if you're at an event and, oh my God, only a handful of people are here, I nomes niya quatragats. Like, there are only four cats here. Like, very, very few people attended.
Yeah.
And when you speak to true Catalans who've been speaking Catalan for a while, quatra just means some, like uns gats. Oh, I went to the market and bought four things. And I look in the bag as like from the Christmas market and I see five or three or six. I'm like, do we not count here? Like, of things that should not have an identity crisis, numbers cannot have an identity crisis. I do not want to think about the philosophy of math while also learning another language.
I know.
So Quatragats gave me a... like a little bit of a hurdle when I was learning it. And also a fun fact is, if you're looking up Catalan online, websites in Catalonia end with .cat, and gat is cat. So you have like, oh, it looks and sounds like cat, but it's gat. Well, gat is cat. So you, there's sometimes cat imagery, and don't let the cat get your tongue when you're speaking Catalan. Venga va, somi, let's go.
I love those. Thank you for sharing those.
Yes.
Well, Taylor, this has been so much fun. So much fun. And I've learned so much about Andorra. I think I still have so much more to learn about Andorra. Before I let you go, in this situation, when you've been talking to someone for quite some time and you've been enjoying their company, enjoying your conversation, and you are at the end of the night, you're about to go your separate ways. In Andorra, what would be the best way to say goodbye?
We would say adeu, que vagi bé. Que vagi bé, may you leave well. It would be like the literal translation, but if we think back to the history of English, we used to say farewell. So we hope that you be well as you, like, you're departing. So que vagi bé is kind of that, like, stay good.
Stay good.
vibes. So
Adeu, adeu que vajive.
Yes. And adeu is like adios, which back in the Middle Ages, like, oh, if I don't see you again, I hope you go to God. So that's why you would say adios or adieu in French or adeu in Catalan.
How about that? Yes. I never even thought about that, but that makes so much sense.
Yes.
So let's say it again. Adeu que
vajive.
I was going to say bang, but I'm like, that's Portuguese. Adeu que vaji bay.
Yes. Bay.
Just bay.
Like, you're bay. My bay.
Bay. Que vaji bay. Yes. Adeu que vaji bay. Taylor, thank you again. Yes. And I will be talking to you soon.
Can't wait.
Bye. New episodes of Speaking Tongues are available every Monday, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and to like and share episodes with other language lovers like ourselves.